Hello, and welcome back to the Other Dream Team Radio. We've got an amazing guest today. I'm proud to introduce Mr. Greg Spears. Greg created the iconic 1992 slam dunking Skullman skeleton trademark design worn by the 1992 Olympic men's Lithuanian basketball team at the 1992 Barcelona Summer Olympics on the medal ceremony's podium. He donated 100% of his profits realized from his iconic slam dunking skeleton design to become the major funder of the 1992 men's Lithuanian Olympic basketball team and subsequently the major funder of the Lithuanian children's charities in 1992 and 1993. Greg was also commissioned by Prince Albert of Monaco to create art for the Monaco Olympic bobsled team sleds, World Cup bobsled championships in 1995 through 1997, and the 1998 Nagano Winter Olympics. He also created and donated American Rugby League uniforms from 1996 to 1998. Greg, hello. How are you?
How's it going? I'd like to say hello, Facebook, and hello, fans of the Other Dream Team.
The fans are important, and they've been amazing, and so many of them are just so excited by the film, and they've all spoken very fondly of your iconic design. Many of them still have their original shirts, and it's exciting that a whole new generation of people are going to get exposed to them. So I really appreciate your time today and just wanted to ask a couple questions that I know many of the fans are likely dying to know. And let's actually begin with, what was the inspiration for this incredible, iconic slam dunking skeleton figure?
Well, the inspiration, I'd like to start out by answering a question from Mandis Valandis, who responded with a question on the Other Dream Team Facebook page. He asked, how did it feel to design something for an entire country, which I thought was a great question. Well, I felt humbled, honored, very honored. You know, anything for charity, always up to a challenge. This particular design, though, it was kind of a scary thing at the beginning because I didn't know if I wanted to go way out or, you know, do something more conservative, because a way out design could either flop or could hit, you know, hit big time. In this case, you know, the latter hit big time. But basically, the meaning of the image, as I said in the Facebook post, the Lithuanian Olympic basketball team represents to me what happens when you release people. You give individuals freedom. You let them go. You let them flourish. You know, they function as a team, but they excel as individuals within that team. The skeleton, to me, symbolizes a team coming up from nothing. Basically, when I started to, this was as the Olympics were going on in '92. During the warm-up games, the team was given the uniforms. You started to see it on TV. My friends told me, hey, look, there's your design. They're wearing the uniforms, look. And this was not in the games, but they started to get some attention. It was really kind of inspiring to see that, and they looked, you know, inspired by it. What happened is, the skeleton art goes back, you know, well, basically that kind of, when I saw the team, you know, that kind of like blew me away. I was like really surprised because we didn't really think anything of it. It was just, you know, a charity gesture, you know, give them something, but then it took off. Basically, I want to back up a little bit. When this thing first happened, you know, they're kind of like plight inspired me to create something that represented what they represented to me. Basically, a skeleton coming up from nothing, coming up from the ashes, and eventually, you know, they went on to win the bronze medal. As far as, like, my skeleton art, to kind of put it in perspective, around, I guess you might even consider it pre-Beatles time. I'm talking about before the Beatles came to America around 1962. There was a game we used to play on the street. We grew up in the stickball era, and we also played another game called Skelly, called Scully. I don't know if maybe that's before your time. Does that ring a bell?
No, no, it definitely does.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of how, like, the skeleton art developed out of that. I'm talking, you know, this game started around the neighborhoods, you know, Bronx and Yonkers and stuff, maybe around late 50s and through the early 60s and stuff. You know, people, you know, we had to invent our own games. The kids had to be kind of, you know, you had to have an ingenuity. You know, we didn't have video games. Things weren't made for you. You had to kind of create your own games. And this was a game basically with you chalk out some squares on the street, on the curb. And it was kind of like with Pogs, almost like a Pog-like game, if you're familiar with that.
Yeah, I am.
It goes way back. And there was a lot of skeleton art involved with that. And that's kind of like where my skeleton art came out of that. So you're talking, you know, 62 before that. Like, I'm pretty much 60, close to 60. And in 92, when all of this happened, Marius Markovicius was like 16, the director. You know, and since he's become a friend of mine. So to put it in perspective, he was 16. I was like pretty close, like just about 40 at that time, you know, so.
That's wild. Let me ask you a couple quick questions. So, you know, you've spoken really eloquently about kind of the theme and what this image represents. I'm curious, though, you know, at that time in your life, you know, certainly we were at a period in American history, the falling of the Soviet Union. You know, you think about the Lithuanians just 4 years prior, many of those players had played on the USSR team and actually beat the Americans. So, you know, this represented so many interesting things. It was their drive for freedom, getting out from the persecution of the Iron Curtain and communism. And I'm curious what you knew about Lithuania. I know you had heard the story, but tell me a little bit. You know, were you somebody who was a big fan of, like, world politics and world history? How did the story even get on your radar to begin with?
Very timely, especially in today's political environment. Well, back then, around this time, before that, actually, around 89, if you remember, I think right before that, Checkpoint Charlie in Germany, somebody, the last person who was trying to make it into West Germany was shot. And then right after that, the people started to go through Czechoslovakia. There was sleuths, you know, they were going through Hungary, Czechoslovakia, going into those countries first to cross the borders to get into, you know, called freedom into the West. And then, I think, you know, the wall, they were still preventing people, but, you know, the Berlin Wall was a key symbol for the plight of the people. But that was in 89. And then the people, like almost like a dam, the people, I guess, representing the water, they couldn't be held back. So then I guess, you know, the border patrols and the armies just gave up. When that happened, there was just such an influx of people. There was no stopping it. When that point happened, you know, when they crossed that point, then you knew it was over. And then that wall was going to come down. And so it was not just Lithuania. It was all the countries. It was like a chain reaction, because the first countries you started hearing about were Czechoslovakia, the influx of people from Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and those were used as conduits, you know. But then after a while, then you didn't need them as conduits. They just came right over through Germany and everything else. And so, like, that was really inspiring. They tried it in Beijing, if you remember the famous scene with the tank and the protest.
In Tiananmen Square.
Tiananmen Square, yeah. To bring it up to par with what's happening today, to me, that was like real. Those were the real. See, people in Lithuania understand freedom, and that's what I identify with. I've dealt with a lot of people from Poland. I know a lot of people from Poland. Very, very similar, the way that the people feel. And a Polish friend of mine said something to me that's very interesting, that our country here, the United States, it made me think. He said, you know something, Greg, your country, meaning the United States, is becoming like the way we were, your government is becoming more centralized, big, more oppressive, and it's as if we have to go back to our founding principles, the founding fathers. In other words, it made me think that, hey, we got to learn a lesson from the Lithuanians, because they truly understand freedom as we did, but we kind of got lazy and kind of lackadaisical and kind of take it for granted, lackadaisical, and just, you know, we're in the day in and day out, we're shopping, we're doing this, we're doing that, and not really appreciating what, you know, people have died for. You know, we had the Revolutionary War, we had a Civil War. All of my family, they've been in World War II, they've been in Korea, they've been in World War I. My grandfather came over, we're immigrants from Italy and Scotland, and my grandfather fought, you know, in the First World War. All of my family's, you know, been in the war, so we appreciate freedom and the sacrifice that people have paid for freedom, and we got to a point where, you know, actually our government is becoming, we're allowing it to become big, you know, like we're actually getting less freedom. We have less freedom. We're giving it less. We're giving up less for whether security, for whatever reason, real or, you know, non-real. We're becoming further away from what the founding fathers intended. And what this Polish friend made me think about is what, you know, the founding fathers set up for us. And I made a statement to Marius during the interview that maybe I'm sure there's a counterpart in Lithuania to George Washington, something to that effect, that they've got to have a counterpart to George Washington. Also, it kind of makes me think about, like, I like political quotes, and let me see if I can find a quote from, two of my favorite political quotes are from Thomas Jefferson, okay? And he's got many quotes, but one of my favorite Thomas Jefferson quote is, when the people fear the government, there's tyranny. But when the government fears the people, this is freedom. And that just about says it all.
I love that. I think that really represents, you know, this incredible struggle that the Lithuanians went through. And to see that really represented by, you know, the bronze medal win with this basketball team, you know, coupled with this incredible image that you created that will, you know, that lives on as part of that legacy.
Yeah.
You know, you think about great iconic moments in history that I think really define social movements, that really define political movements. And I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure you weren't even necessarily thinking in those big sweeping terms, but it's nice that, you know, over 20 years later, that still really applies. So one of the things I'm curious about, I imagine, like you said, you were a man in your 40s at the time, and you're an artist, and we know that it's not the easiest thing in the world necessarily to make a living from your art. And yet here you did this thing, and you decided to donate 100% of your profits and literally became the major funder. And, you know, together with this incredible band like the Grateful Dead. So you probably thought long and hard about that. But what prompted that decision to say, you know, it's really not about the money, it's about doing the right thing? Share a little bit about that.
Yeah, first of all, it's not about the money. Money's to be used to do things with, you know, not to hoard. But let me just preface that by saying something nice about the Grateful Dead. You know, they got to be, you know, geniuses. Marcelona's got to be a genius, because I give him credit for all of the, you know, he had to have just a pure drive, all the rallying he did in the beginning to get money, you know, to get people to fund. You know, he must have a great business mind. He's got to be a genius with a business mind. I was only glad to contribute my part. Now, basically, you said, like, why 100%? You know, why not? Well, you always hear in a lot of these charities this phrase, portions of proceeds, or then you'll hear another one, raising awareness. They're doing this to raise awareness. You know, it sounds all good and everything. If you're going to do it, give 100%. That's what charity is supposed to be. And furthermore, like I said, money is supposed to be used for something good. Use it to accomplish something. If you're going to flourish in your business, you use it for that. In this case, this kind of Dean, I mean, these guys were struggling. You could see how they needed the help. They were reaching out to people, you know. So basically, I give them credit for rallying and getting this all together in the beginning, but didn't think much of it in the beginning. But then once they stood on that podium with the shirts, and once the shirts started selling, you see, that's when the money started to be made for the team. And so then I was asked, you know, well, what do you want to do with this? Like, well, you want to give a portion? Like, how much you want to do? I said, well, then they said, well, some of it, you know, it's going to go to the team. And then to support the team, to fund the team, they got to continue to be funded. And I think this went all the way to 96, too. Then they said the rest of it's going to be given it to the children's charity. So once they said that to children, I mean, once you say children, give it all. How much? 100%. You got it. Give it all, you know?
Good for you. Good for you. Again, like you said, people pay lip service to that, and then so much of the money goes to cover overhead. So that's a really admirable thing that you did, and I appreciate that so much, and I know the fans do as well. So I'm curious, you know, you at that point, you had become obviously known as the creator of this incredible figure, and then your bio talks a little bit about how Prince Albert of Monaco reached out to you and how you also created uniforms for the American Rugby League. So tell me a little bit, you know, even beyond the Lithuanian team and the, you know, the really amazing work that you did there. Tell me about some of these other great experiences where you had an opportunity to help design things for other Olympic teams and other sports leagues.
Yeah, you know, I'm always creating, uniforms and designs. I do a lot of artwork for a lot of different teams, extreme sports, stuff like that. And Prince Albert, that was, you know, that was a fantastic experience.
I'm sure you've had the opportunity to meet some amazing people through your creativity and your generosity of spirit. When you and I spoke the other day, you told me a great story that I thought the fans might be interested to learn a little bit about with regard to the Hall of Fame. So why don't you share a little bit about what your plans are with that and kind of give a little bit of backstory so folks understand some context as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I don't know if the fans even know about this. What we did in 1993, December 7th, 1993, the day that will live in infamy, we created kind of an installment. It took maybe 3.5-4 months, and we had a press conference on that day, December 7th, 1993, and it was the Skullman's dedication to the Lithuanian team. It was a dedication to the Lithuanian team. It was almost the whole, like, wing to itself. It had some artifacts and huge three-dimensional skull man coming off the ceiling and the wall, mural, slam dunking skull man, like 18 foot wide by like 12 foot high. Thing was like huge. And the original shirts were there, original artwork for the original shirt. I think they had the Basketball Hall of Fame got a hold of Marcelonis's uniform. The Basketball Hall of Fame got that. They got some other items from him and some of the players and some other some kind of artifacts frame that were framed, and we had a really nice exhibit, and the whole thing was dedicated to the Lithuanian basketball team and Skullman. And so what happened is that was in the old Hall of Fame. Now, this is in Springfield, Massachusetts. Now, that's the old Hall of Fame that since has been knocked down. But that site of that old Hall of Fame was actually the site of the original site where Nesmith invented the game of basketball. So the Hall of Fame was built on the site, actual site that where the game of basketball was invented, where they used to play with peach baskets, right up there in Springfield, Massachusetts. Now that Hall of Fame was knocked down. A new one was built, but on a different location. Since I haven't been to that new location, but being you brought that up, what I'd like to do is reach out to all the Facebook fans of the other Dream Team, and let's try to maybe contact, email, send some correspondence over to the new proprietor, not proprietor, what's the word, the coordinator of the Basketball Hall of Fame. Let's try to resurrect. What I'd like to do is resurrect all of the artifacts and the exhibit, exhibit dedicated to the Lithuanian basketball team, 1992 Lithuanian basketball team, and Skolmion, which is all, it's taken apart, and it's in some back room somewhere. Now, I did speak to the new coordinator of the Basketball Hall of Fame, and he said, yeah, we have it here. It's in storage. It's in the back room somewhere, and, everything's here, the original art, all of that stuff, and so I want to try to rally all the fans of the other Dream Team to try to get this thing resurrected again, being this is the 20th year anniversary of the other Dream Team, which by the way, I think I love the name. The first time when Marius and John Weinbeck interviewed me for this, and when they asked me, what do you think of the name? Oh, wow, I think it's a fantastic name. I love the name. It just about says it all. I think Mary's genius for coming up with that name. It's great. Just about says it all. But let's resurrect that exhibit.
So we'll post along with this interview links so folks can contact the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame and let the curator and let the coordinator know that we want to see the Lithuanian Dream Team exhibit back there, and we'll make sure that folks know about that. You've seen the film, you're in the film, so people are always conscious of what movies to go see and how to spend their money. Why is this the documentary that you think fans should be seeing? Tell us a little bit about why this is such an important film that people should really check out, even if they never knew about the story before.
Well, number one, for all of us, first of all, go to the movies for an escape, number one. The movies, they should also, there's a good lesson. The whole, if you could condense it down to one thing, just be freedom, just appreciation for freedom, and maybe how we in America should learn from, because this is an American audience that's going to be seeing it now, learn from the Lithuanians to get back to our roots and what made us great, because I know that the Lithuanians surely do know that, and I know they have an appreciation for freedom, just like the people in Poland and all the other Baltic countries that have found themselves in a similar plight. But the plight of the Lithuanians, this story, when I first heard about it, just kind of struck a chord with me, and that said to me, hey, I'm going to create an image that represents that plight and the struggle and the way they feel. 50% of it is supposed to be fun. You're supposed to go there and have some fun in the movies.
Of course.
If you cry, that's good too. Because I heard a lot of people came out of there crying. But don't worry.
Tears of joy.
Well,
Greg, it truly has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking these moments to share a little bit more about your story with us. I know we'll post some links through the Other Dream Team Facebook and website, but if people want to find out more information about you and about your background, is there anywhere online that we can direct them to at this time?
Oh, yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. And by the way, they can go to skolmion.com, and I just wanted to add, that's skolmion.com, skolmion.com. You can contact me. It's very easy. Greg, G-R-E-G, at skolmion.com. Greg at skolmion.com. And I just wanted to add, I'm glad you reminded me, we also have the shirts available. We've got the original 1992 shirts available. That's the exact original shirt. We also have, for this year, for the 20th anniversary, the 2012 edition 20th anniversary shirts with the same exact front, but with the 20th anniversary denoting the year on the back, printed in gold. We've got those two available, and we're coming out with a limited edition signed and numbered on the shirts as well.
Excellent. And I know the fans are going to love learning more about you, and we'll make sure we direct them to your website. Have a great afternoon, sir.